I'd like you to open to Judges chapter number 10, and I want to explain again my chronology at this point. I believe that after the 3 years of the tyrant Abimelech, once he died and was out of the way, we have two judges that arise very quickly, contemporaneously, one on the east side and one on the west side of the Jordan Valley, and that this is a regional thing, and that will play into the story that follows their leadership. Chapter 10 says, after Abimelech, there arose to save Israel Tola, the son of Pua, son of Dodo, a man of Issachar. So Issachar is the tribe that is up in the Galilee region on the west side of the Jordan, in Israel proper. He lived at Shamir in the hill country of Ephraim. So he actually lives and apparently serves down in the region where Abimelech has just been causing all his trouble, down not too far from Shechem. And so he judged Israel 23 years. Keep that number in mind. Then he died and he was buried at Shamir. Now, after him, and I think it means shortly after he began, there arose Yair the Gileadite, who judged Israel 22 years. So I believe Yair starts serving in Gilead a matter of days, weeks, or months after Tola begins serving in Ephraim. And so they've got both sides of the Jordan covered. Now, this guy, Yair, he had 30 sons. So he's not a spring chicken, obviously. These are adults who rode on 30 donkeys, and they had 30 cities called Havaot Yair, or the cities of Yair, to this very day, which are in the land of Gilead. So apparently, Yair divvies up leadership amongst his relatives, his sons, through the region in the area along the west, the eastern shore of the Jordan Valley. Now, Yair died, and then he was buried at Kamon. The next verse follows up with the typical pattern we've been watching. Once a leader dies, we have a breakout of sin. Verse 6, the people of Israel again did what was evil in the sight of He who is, and served the Baalim and the Ashtaroth. So that's the two gods, male and female, of the Canaanites that are represented by idols at a whole bunch of different sites. And so that's why it's always plural here. But this is the power couple in the pagan divine world, and the Israelis start worshiping them. These are the gods of Syria, the gods of Sidon, the gods of Moab, the gods of the Ammonites, the gods of the Philistines. So they're picking up the pantheon of all these different ethnic groups that God told them, don't do that. But the power couple at the head of all these pantheons is Baal and Asherah. So they forsook He who is and did not serve Him. So the anger of He who is was kindled against Israel, and He sold them into the hand of the Philistines. That would be on the west side of Israel, down on the Mediterranean coast, and into the hand of the Ammonites. That's on the east side of the Jordan. Gilead is along most of the eastern side of the Jordan Valley, and on the other side of Gilead is the Ammonite territory. So I believe that as soon as Yair died and the people of Israel in that region started breaking out in open worship of all these pagan deities, God said, fine, and allowed the Ammonites to sweep in. And so it says, the anger of he who is was kindled against Israel. He sold them into the hands of the Philistines and into the hand of the Ammonites, and they crushed and oppressed the people of Israel that year. So I believe that's the year after Yair died, having served 22 years. For 18 years they oppressed all the people of Israel who were beyond the Jordan in the land of the Amorites, which is in Gilead. So Gilead becomes the first target of this new oppression. But read verse number 9. And the Ammonites crossed the Jordan to fight also against Judah and against Benjamin and against the house of Ephraim, so that Israel was severely distressed. I believe that happened the following year, once Tola died, and the Ephraimites and the Judeans and the Benjamites started misbehaving. And God said, fine, and allowed the Ammonites to sweep westward across the Jordan Valley and into Israel proper. And so this Ammonite invasion of both eastern Israel and western Israel takes hold for 18 years. Verse 10. The people of Israel cried out to He Who Is, saying, we have sinned against you because we've forsaken our God and have served the Baalim. And He Who Is said to the people of Israel, apparently through a prophet, did I not save you from the Egyptians and from the Amorites, from the Ammonites, from the Philistines? The Sidonians also, and the Amalekites, and the Maonites oppressed you, and you cried out to me, and I saved you out of their hand. So God goes back into history and says, haven't we been down this path before where you cried out to me, and I helped you escape the oppression that was happening against you? Verse 13, yet you have forsaken me and served other gods. Therefore, I will save you no more. You go and cry out to the gods whom you've chosen. Let them save you in the time of your distress. That kind of echoes a little bit of what Joshua said before he passed on, where he challenged them, make up your mind. Are you going to serve the gods that your forefathers served in Mesopotamia or down in Egypt or the gods of the peoples of Canaan? Or are you going to serve the real God? Make up your mind. Choose a side. But as for me and my house, we're going to be serving He Who Is. Well, here's God saying, you guys chose a side. Stick with it. See whether or not those gods and goddesses can get you out of the scrap that you're in right now with the oppression of the Ammonites. Verse 15. The people of Israel said to He Who Is, we have sinned. Do to us whatever seems good to you. Only please deliver us this day. So they put away the foreign gods from among them, and they served He Who Is, and he became impatient over the misery of Israel. So apparently after 18 years of being oppressed, they actually repented and changed their behavior. Remember, true repentance is not just being sorry you got caught, sorry that you got busted and bad consequences came of that. True repentance is actually changing the way you think about the situation, bringing your mindset into alignment with the mindset of God. And because of that, you change your behavior. So these guys finally, after 18 years of this, they changed their behavior. And they started destroying their pagan worship sites and their idols, and they quit worshiping these other gods and goddesses. And that's when God is going to be willing to empower a new Savior. Chapter number 10, verse 17. Then the Ammonites were called to arms, and they encamped in Gilead. This is probably another one of those instances where the oppressors simply wait until the harvest has been brought in by the Israelis, and then they invade. And so that seems to be them coming to get their goodies for the year. Well, this time, the people of Israel came together, and they encamped at Mizpah. Now, this is Mizpah of Jacob's naming. You remember when Jacob came from Paddan Aram? He was like moving as fast as he could to get ahead of his father-in-law, and he made it all the way down into what would eventually be called Gilead, a place that was south and east of the Sea of Galilee. And that's where his father-in-law caught up with him, and they had this back-and-forth argument about the situation, and they finally came to an agreement of peace between them. But they set up a pile of rocks. And Jacob said, this pile of rocks is going to be a witness between me and you that God is always watching us. Even when we're not in each other's presence, God has got his eye on us. And this will be our watchtower between us. That's Mizpah. That's this place that Israel gathers to, south and east of the Sea of Galilee. And they are preparing themselves to attack the invading Ammonites this particular time around. The people, the leaders of Gilead, said to one another, "Who's the man that's going to begin to fight against the Ammonites? He shall be head over all the inhabitants of Gilead." So they're looking for the next leader of Gilead, the next judge of Gilead, to kind of take the place of Yair, probably. And they're trying to figure out who the best guy for the job is. Introduce the best guy. Chapter 11. Now, Jephthah, the Gileadite, was a mighty warrior, but he was the son of a prostitute. Gilead was the father of Jephthah. Gilead's wife also had borne him sons, and when his wife's sons grew up, they drove Jephthah out, and they said to him, "You shall not have an inheritance in our father's house. You're the son of another woman." And so Jephthah fled from his brothers and lived in the land of Tob, let me check that. I was going to check it ahead of time. That's what I thought. Tob is the way that it's representing the Hebrew word for good. So Jephthah was an illegitimate son of this man named after the region, Gilead. As he grows up and his half-brothers who are legitimate grow up, they have a falling out. And they basically say, "You're not a real son. Get out of here. You can't have any of the inheritance from dad when he dies. Leave." So he does. And he goes somewhere, we don't know where, to a land that's called Good. And that's where he lives. But he becomes kind of like a warlord. Worthless fellows collected around Jephthah and went out with him. So he gets a bunch of guys, sons of Belial is the term that gets used here, troublemakers, and they live kind of a rough life. Verse number four. After a time, the Ammonites made war against Israel. That's the time period we're talking about right now. It's after they've been under the Ammonites for 18 years, and now they're going to fight back, and they need somebody to lead them. And they were asking, who's going to be that guy? Verse 5, when the Ammonites made war against Israel, the elders of Gilead went to bring Jephthah from the land of Tob. And they said to Jephthah, come, be our leader, that we may fight against the Ammonites. So they're looking for a tough guy, and Jephthah is apparently a tough guy. Jephthah said to the elders of Gilead, did you not hate me and drive me out of my father's house? Why have you come to me now that you're in distress? The elders of Gilead said to Jephthah, that is why we've turned to you now, that you may go with us and fight against the Ammonites and be our head over against over all of the inhabitants of Gilead. So they're basically like, we want to make it up to you. We need a tough guy like you, and we want you to be the new leader of Gilead. So Jephthah said to the elders of Gilead, if you bring me home again, meaning back to my father's property area, to fight against the Ammonites, and he who is gives them over to me, I will be your head. That's the arrangement. That's the agreement. And the elders of Gilead said to Jephthah, he who is will be the witness between us if we do not do as you say. So Jephthah went with the elders of Gilead, and the people made him head and leader over them. And Jephthah spoke all his words before he who is at Mizpah. Now, we don't know how intimate this relationship is that Jephthah has with he who is, but he has some sort of relationship. And so when he comes to take on this responsibility, he takes it seriously enough to talk to God about it. And he makes an oath that's not mentioned here, but it'll be mentioned elsewhere. He makes an oath that if you, Lord, will give the Ammonites into my hand, let me become the strong leader of the Israeli people over here in Gilead, then I will offer you the first thing from my household that I see when I come back home. Keep that in mind. Verse 12. Jephthah then sent messengers to the king of the Ammonites. So now he's ready to engage the other side. It isn't just go attack them. He decides to try talking to them first. I think probably a reasonable thing to do. What do you have against me that you've come to me to fight against my land? And the king of the Ammonites answered the messengers of Jephthah, because Israel, on coming up from Egypt, took away my land from the Arnon to the Yabuk and to the Jordan, and now therefore restore it peaceably. Now, that's actually not true, and Jephthah will point that out in a bit. The Ammonites' God-given territory is from the ancient highway eastward. From the ancient highway westward, that was actually under the control of Amorites, Canaanite types, whenever the Israelis came through. So the Ammonites had nothing to do with that property whenever the Israelis first came through. But, you know, you never let the accuracy of history get in the way of what you want. So verse 14, Jephthah again sent messengers to the king of the Ammonites and said to them, thus says Jephthah, Israel did not take away the land of Moab or the land of the Ammonites. But when they came up from Egypt, Israel went through the wilderness to the Red Sea. They came to Kadesh. That's on the south entry point of Canaan. Israel then sent messengers to the king of Edom, saying, please let us pass through your land. But the king of Edom would not listen. They sent also to the king of Moab, and he would not consent. So Israel remained at Kadesh, and then they journeyed through the wilderness, meaning they went around the south side of Edom, and then they went around the east side of Moab. And they went around the land of Edom and the land of Moab and arrived on the east side of the land of Moab, and they camped on the other side of the Arnon, that is on the south side of the Arnon drainage into the north bay of the Dead Sea. But they did not enter the territory of Moab, for the Arnon was the boundary of Moab. Israel then sent messengers to Sihon, king of the Amorites, king of Heshbon. Now, I don't think he brings it up here clearly, but basically the Moabites had recently lost the northern half of their territory to King Sihon, which is why the Israelis were having to ask for permission from Sihon to pass down to the Jordan, not the Moabites for the permission to pass down to the Jordan. Israel sent messengers to Sihon, king of Ammonites, king of Heshbon, and Israel said to him, please let us pass through your land to our country. But Sihon did not trust Israel to pass through his territory, so Sihon gathered all his people together and encamped at Jahaz and fought with Israel. And he who is, and he's using the divine name here, that's important, he who is the God of Israel gave Sihon and all his people into the hand of Israel, and they defeated them. So Israel took possession of all the land of the Amorites who inhabited that country. And they took possession of all the territory of the Ammonites from the Arnon to the Yabuk, and from the wilderness to the Jordan. And then he who is the God of Israel dispossessed the Ammonites from before his people Israel. And are you to take possession of them? So basically he says, you understand, historically, our God, he who is, defeated the Amorites that had control of this territory that's now known as Gilead and gave it to our ancestors. This is God-given land here. What makes you think that you should be able to have it? Then he says this, verse 24, will you not possess what Chemosh, your God, gives you to possess? And all that he who is our God has dispossessed before us, we will possess. Chemosh is their twisted, the Moabite and Ammonite twisted version of the God who destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, the true God. They have some really weird worship practices with them. But Jephthah's point is, if your God has given you your land, it's yours. Nobody else gets to take it without his permission. Well, guess what? He who is gave this land to us. Nobody else gets to take it. Verse 25. Now, are you any better than Balak, the son of Zippor, the king of Moab? Did he ever contend against Israel? Or did he ever go to war with them? Basically, Moab couldn't even take it from us, even though they tried to use surreptitious means of doing so. While Israel lived in Heshbon and its villages, and in Aroer and its villages, and in all the cities that are on the banks of the Arnon, 300 years, why did you not deliver them within that time? So this tells us pretty clearly it's been 300 years since the Sihon and Og War. And his question is, why didn't you try to take this land in the previous 300 years if you really believed it belonged to you? That doesn't stand in your support very well, does it? Verse 27, I therefore have not sinned against you, and you do me wrong by making war on me. He who is the judge, decide this day between the people of Israel and the people of Ammon. So Jephthah finishes his diplomacy by saying, it's our territory, it's God-given territory, and you don't have the ability to take it from us now any more than you had the ability to take it from us any time during the last 300 years. How dare you keep trying to take this property? Verse 28, but the king of the Ammonites did not listen to the words of Jephthah that he sent to him. In other words, he'd rather fight. Then the spirit of he who is was upon Jephthah. That's a supernatural empowerment. And he passed through Gilead and Manasseh. Manasseh is to the north of Gilead. And passed on to Mizpah of Gilead. And from Mizpah of Gilead, he passed on to the Ammonites. So he's attacking the Ammonites from the north. Jephthah made a vow to he who is and said, if you will give the Ammonites into my hand, then whatever comes out of the doors of my house to meet me when I return in peace from the Ammonites shall be he who is's, and I will offer it up for a burnt offering. And so Jephthah crossed over to the Ammonites to fight against them. The crossing over here is across one of the rivers that flow westward from Gilead down into the Jordan. So he crossed over to the Ammonites to fight against them, and he who is gave them into his hand. And he struck them from Aroer to the neighborhood of Minnith, 20 cities, as far as Abel Karamim, with a great blow. So the Ammonites were subdued before the people of Israel. So this was the great victory of the judge Jephthah at the beginning of his very brief leadership of Israel.